Senator David Perdue, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to me today. Let me start by asking you this. You wrote an op-ed piece for the Washington Examiner in which you repeated an observation that you and your GOP colleagues have made a number of times. You talk about the radical socialist ideas that Democrats are putting forth, and that I guess you're saying you expect to hear on the debate stage tonight, right?
Well, I think it's going to be on full display. It has been in every debate so far. These guys are trying to outleft themselves. I mean, between the Green New Deal and all the other socialized medicine, all the other things that that you'll hear talked about tonight, nobody really has owned up, though, to what this would cost and how it would change the very fabric of our country in terms of individual choice, the free market system. I'm just telling you that this economic miracle that we've enjoyed since World War II, Bill, and you and I have had this conversation. I've heard you talk about it, too, on your show. You know, it's in different ways. It's innovation, capital formation, the rule of law, and the thing that we believe in is an opportunity for everybody. And so what we hear now is moving from that free market system to a state-controlled system that we know hasn't worked around the world. I mean, it failed in the Soviet Union. It failed in Cuba. It failed in Germany. It failed in Venezuela, Greece. I mean, we can do this all day. But I can't find one example where what they're talking about has actually worked.
So, Senator, let me be sure about one aspect of what you're saying. Certainly, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have been promoting agendas that even many Democrats think are far too liberal. But Joe Biden continues to lead in virtually every national poll. And now Pete Buttigieg seems to be having a surge, certainly in Iowa. And now there's new polling in New Hampshire that shows he's making a move up. So, first of all, Biden continues to lead in Georgia. Do you consider Joe Biden a socialist?
Well, absolutely. When he talks about, you know, expanding a failed thing called the Affordable Care Act, I mean, right now, only 99 counties in Georgia, Bill, only have one insurance carrier. I was a victim of that when I retired in Georgia and when the Affordable Care Act became law. So, yeah, that's definitely a move in that direction. Let me give you even more. The Great Society, and this is what Joe Biden really espouses, along with these other guys who want to go even further. They've been doing this for the last 100 years. The Great Society was a product of a supermajority. That means the Democrats had 60 votes, they had the House, they had the White House. And in there, that's where the bankrupting of the Social Security system started. And it's also where all these federal programs that were intended to do good, we all wanted to do the things they were talking about, but not the way they were doing. Let me give you an example. The Great Society had a great war on poverty. We were going to reduce poverty in America. And we spent trillions of dollars trying to do that. It was well-intended, I get that. But it failed. The poverty rate in 2017 was the same as it was in 1965. And yet, in the last couple of years, just by pulling back a little bit in regulation, passing an energy package that makes us more competitive with the rest of the world, and releasing our energy potential, which is basically free market principles here, we brought 2.5 million people out of poverty, Bill, and nobody ever talks about that. So we have a clear comparison between what even Joe Biden, who is now seen as a reasonable moderate on the Democratic side, but compared to the founding principles that made this economic miracle work, he's a raving radical too.
Senator, I'm not quite sure how you see the Affordable Care Act as being a socialist product.
Let me tell you why. Because it basically denied your ability to choose your doctor. It says if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. It lied. They lied about that. You can't. If you like your insurance policy, you can keep that. They lied about that. So they told me as an individual, when I was in the individual insurance market, that I basically only had one choice about an insurance product. That is a socialist idea where the state tells me what I can do in my own insurance. Now, that is ridiculous. It is absolutely socialist.
So, following up on that line of thought, as Governor Kemp prepares to submit waivers to expand Medicaid to some portion of the Georgia population, and a waiver that would bring some $62 billion of federal money into a state pool, would you advise him that he shouldn't participate in what you think of as a socialist system?
I think you have to be very careful, because what happens at the end of the day when that money is not there? Absolutely. I am very concerned. look, I support this governor. He's working hard and doing the right thing so far. And this is one where we need a broader solution to this. And look, we wasted a decade talking about insurance bill, and we never really got to the debate about what costs are. And costs are really driving Medicare out of control. This is what's driving the debt more than anything else. And we've got to move the debate to that. So what we do with insurance, well, it's very fungible, by the way, because every administration is going to tend to monkey around with that over the next few years until we get something that actually works. But right now, I'm very concerned about the health care costs. And we see some legislation now, some bipartisan efforts up here. Patty Murray and Lamar Alexander, for example, in their committee, the health committee, are in the Senate, are trying to work on a bipartisan solution that will actually address pharmaceutical costs, surprise billing, and things like that in a step-by-step fashion, as opposed to these comprehensive sweeping solutions that have been perpetrated on the American people.
Those bipartisan solutions would build on the Affordable Care Act, not dismantle it, right?
Well, nobody's talking about repeal and replace anymore, Bill, so that's a semantic argument.
Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to be sure I understood that.
What we're talking about is really trying to fix the healthcare delivery system. We have a problem with pharmaceuticals right now where most of the R&D of pharmaceutical innovation, it has changed our lives. Heart attacks and cardiovascular disease used to be a major cause of death. It's now down to, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 in terms of mortality. HIV, we've now learned to manage that. Diabetes. So the pharmaceutical industry has done a great job of that, but these other countries who have national health systems, it becomes a trade issue that they're limiting the cost of the drug over there, so we inadvertently in the U.S. end up absorbing that R&D cost. We've got to fix that.
Thank you for your comments on that. If I can, let me turn to another subject. As you know, certainly, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution published a poll which was conducted by the University of Georgia, which shows that 53% of Georgians support the impeachment inquiry. Now, clearly, most of the Republicans they surveyed do not support it, but they also found that people are pretty much split down the middle, 47, I think, to 47%, on whether the president should, in fact, be impeached and removed from office. What do those figures tell you?
First of all, Bill, that same poll had me down 8 to 10 points for the full year I was running in 2014. I won by more than 8 points. This is a very biased poll, and I can show you why, because the average age of the person that they inquired, the 600 people that they looked at, was very heavily skewed toward college-age students and younger voters. That's one issue. The second issue is that right now, I believe that most people in America understand the rule of law and fairness, and we're denying this president his basic human right that we give every other citizen in America. In fact, we fight around the world protecting other people's rights like this. I've looked at the evidence. It does not rise to the level of impeachment. When people see how light this case is, when they finally get it to the Senate and we can actually have a true vetting of what information is there, the American people will see this for what it is, and that's an ultimate sham.
So there's still public testimony ongoing, as you obviously know, in the House Intelligence Committee, but you're saying you're comfortable that you don't really need to hear what the ongoing testimony will be. You already know how you feel about this.
Well, those are your words, Bill.
What I said was
that with the evidence that I've seen, that nothing rises to the level of impeachment. And
okay.
What I anticipate coming from these people, we've already seen what their testimony is going to be. We haven't heard it, but we know what their involvement has been. It's not going to rise to the level of impeachment. So.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you for clarifying that. Let me ask you just one more quick question. I'm curious about one aspect, something else going on. You know Governor Kemp has now closed the application process for choosing someone to replace Johnny Isaacson until the November special election. Do you support the theory that given the diverse pool of candidates that the governor now has to choose from, that it would be in the interest of Georgia Republicans if he were to pick someone who broadens the range of the party, an African-American candidate, a female candidate? Would you advise him that that's a good approach to take in making this election?
Well, absolutely. I mean, he's been doing that. You know, the governor has been taking his time, looking at all. I mean, my goodness, he even did a portal to take applications. I mean, this man has taken on a lot of work in order to do just what you're saying. And look, the great news about this whole process is how deep the Republican bench is of potential public servants who have, you know, the right heart for doing what they want to do for Georgia. And so, yes, I mean, you've got several avenues to go. You can break a gender gap, you can break a racial barrier. You can, you know, we've got sitting congressmen up here who are candidates. I mean, we've got a long list of qualified candidates. Here's the bottom line. Whoever the governor picks will be my running mate, and we're going to expose this socialist agenda for what it really is and take that to the people of Georgia and let them decide. Look, Georgia's been, for seven straight years now, has been the best state in the country in which to do business. These socialist ideas would destroy much of that, and we're going to make this campaign about that.
So let me be clear, though. Would you think it would be helpful to you, since this person will essentially be your running mate, if the choice was someone who could broaden the diversity of the party and perhaps give you back some of the losses that Republicans are taking among independent women, suburban women? Would that be helpful?
Absolutely, but that's a political question. You know, the better question is who's going to best serve those constituencies? And so I'm a white guy, but I've been more involved with HBCUs and federal justice reform and all of those things that have helped that particular community more so than anybody else I've seen in Georgia. So that's the first thing. But yes, I think the governor is doing the right thing by considering people in a very diverse nature. And I think you're going to be, I think the state of Georgia will be very pleased when he finally gets his decision out there.
What do you think about the fact that Doug Collins is letting it be known that if he is not the choice, he is considering running against whoever the governor does choose in the contest in November? Would you advise your colleague, Representative Collins, to accept the governor's decision and not challenge it in the election?
Well, I'm not presumptuous enough to say, you know, that I'm going to give anybody advice. You know, the governor has been running his effort to pick the right person. I trust him to do that. The president has been involved. There are stakeholders here, the president and I, and then in 2 years after next year, Governor Kemp will have to run again. So they're all in there. I just think this is representative democracy at its best. You know, Congressman Collins will have to make his decision at the time. And we'll see where we go. But here's the one thing we need to do. We can have an active jungle election next year. I'm not afraid of that, even if it goes into a runoff, because ultimately truth will win out here in Georgia. It always has. And so I'm convinced that if we unite behind this, we can get the story out, and that's what's at play today.
Senator Perdue, it's a pleasure to get an opportunity to talk to you. So thank you very much on this morning of the Democratic debate for spending a little time with Political Rewind. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Hey, David, thank you. Hey, someday when you've got, you know, a recess going on, we'd love to get you in the studio and do a longer live interview with you, and I'll keep talking to your office about that.
We'll make that happen. I would love that. I love our conversations, Bill. You're very thoughtful. You've been around down there a long time. You know these issues, and you can see the perspectives that a lot of people need to see.
Well, thanks, David. Have a great day up there.
Appreciate it, Bill.
Bye.
You too. Thanks, man.